KPCW News time is 8:07. Let's do a little local news. The longest night of the year will be celebrated Saturday with local musicians providing some new music. KPCW's Leslie Thatcher has more.
Singer-songwriters Brian Friedman and Wyatt Pike will perform at the Prospector Theater for the winter solstice. The doors open at 6:30 and Pike will take the stage with his best friend and guitar player Nick Dillman at 7:30.
I'm going to be singing all kinds of my songs, a whole bunch of new ones that I've not put out yet. I've had a long year of writing and working on new music, so just very excited to share those with a local community.
Friedman will be performing with his band, Free Dog.
We have a kind of mixed bag, like some of our old stuff, some new stuff, and a few things that haven't been released yet, which we're really stoked to share, and then a couple cover tunes as well, and there's a good chance Wyatt will join us for a couple songs.
He says performing on both the summer and winter solstice is something he looks forward to.
It's such a great time of year, both the summer and winter solstice. And we just decided that we should start playing shows on those days. And then, you know, it's a cool celebration. It's one of those dark, dark, dark days, but we want to bring warmth to that, hang out with good people, and bring some warm vibes to an otherwise dark night. It's also a little bit of a summoning of the snow gods. And we certainly need that this year.
Tickets to the event are $35, and a link to purchase them is online at kpcw.org. Leslie Thatcher, KPCW News.
We're expecting to hear from Nate Larson with the ABC4 Weather Center. I'm a little concerned that the reason he's not here is because he doesn't have a lot of snow in the forecast, but I expect we'll be hearing from him soon. And while we're waiting to hear from Nate, let's find out what these current conditions look like up in the backcountry. On the phone, I've got Greg with the Utah Avalanche Center. Good morning, Greg.
Yeah, good morning. I can fill you in on the weather a little bit. I'm not a meteorologist. I'm an avalanche forecaster, but we're actually expecting near record temperatures in the mountains today. And tomorrow is the first day of astronomical winter. So hard to believe. Temperatures are going to be approaching 50 degrees today. So pretty warm, but the sun angle is low, so I don't think it's going to have a huge effect. It's going to be just a pretty day in the mountains. We're going with an overall moderate avalanche danger on upper elevation slopes facing west through north through southeast. We've been stuck in this pattern for several weeks now. We have weak sugary snow on northerly facing slopes on the north half of the compass. And where you're likely to find the most problem is where there's been some wind loading. That seems to be the pattern we've discovered, that you have this stronger slab of snow on top of the weak faceted snow down near the ground. And to get that stronger slab, you need something. You need some kind of wind loading. So if you identify a slope that's been wind loaded, avalanches are possible. Outside of that, it's a low avalanche danger. We are telling people because of the warm temperatures today, I'm expecting some loose, wet snow. I don't think it's going to be widespread. Most southerly facing slopes are bare of snow or just crusted snow. So, yeah, just pay attention to those northerly facing slopes. And we are expecting a few inches of snow maybe later on Sunday into Monday. And next week is actually looking a little bit more promising for a change in the weather. So fingers crossed that we'll be seeing some snow next week. That's about it for us.
So at this point in the season, Greg, is the snow cover sort of less than you would expect? I mean, we're talking about pretty thin covers up there, aren't we?
You got it. Yeah, we're about 50% of normal. The good news is it's early season, so it's not hard to make up 50% in December. If we were talking 50% of normal in February, we'd be in trouble. So yeah, we are. It's been much leaner than we're used to, but we can make it up. We can make it up quickly. The good news is in the weather pattern. Again, I'm not a meteorologist, but I do talk to them.
You're what I have this morning, Greg. So let me hear what you have to say.
And we're seeing some signals of a pattern change, beginning later this month and into January. So, our fingers crossed that we will see a more routine pattern, something that we're used to in northern Utah, beginning in January. Certainly we're hopeful that for this coming week. Is there a big storm out there? I don't know. So far we're about 50% of normal for snowfall. The resorts, they've been making snow. We have had conditions that are conducive for making snow. So the resorts have pretty decent coverage. And there is decent coverage in the backcountry. We have We're spoiled here in the Wasatch, and we get a lot of snow, and we get a lot of good snow, and we're used to that. But even on lean years like we've experienced so far this season, we have a decent enough snow where you can travel around. So, so we are spoiled, and sometimes we need a reminder of that. And when it does snow again, I think we'll be even more thankful.
All right. Greg, thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you so much. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Local News Hour. Just a moment, we're going to talk with Cheryl Fox about her new book, Prophecy. Then Mayor Nan Worrell is going to join us to recap last night's Park City Council meeting. And if we have time, to look back at the significant events that have happened here in the city in 2024. We're going to finish our hour by speaking with Nancy Vollmer of the Salt Lake City Airport about new development during what must be an exceptionally busy day at the airport. Let's turn now to Cheryl Fox. Cheryl may be best known in town for her day job at the Summit Land Conservancy, but she's also a fantasy novelist. She's here to discuss her new book, Prophecy. Good morning, Cheryl. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
So, Cheryl, Prophecy is the second book in a planned trilogy, as I understand it. But
yes.
Let's set the background a little bit. Let's talk a little about the first book.
Okay.
Can you share a bit about the setting, the plot, the characters of what in that book and how it sets this one up?
So this is a planned trilogy, actually, and I call it the Paradox Trilogy. And it starts with the first book, which is called Paradox.
Paradoxically,
yes. And, you know, it's in many ways sort of a classic fantasy. I've always loved fantasy. But several years ago, I got a little, I don't know, jaded. You know, like in any genre, there are sort of things that naturally happen. You usually have a quest, you've got magic, you've got things like that.
It's like the fantasy equivalent of boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girls back.
That's right. You know, yeah. I mean, they say there's one story that is always told. You know, a stranger comes to town, or you know, somebody goes on a journey and then becomes a stranger in town. And both of those things happen in Paradox, of course. But what I really kind of thought would be interesting was to say, what if we tried things a little bit differently, where instead of having the evil creatures or the plot motivated by, you know, sort of unredeemable evil, monsters, orcs, whatever, because, we don't generally see monsters or orcs in everyday life.
Unless you watch the news.
But and, yeah, well... you know, so how do we deal with that? You know, mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, and I got to thinking as in one of my several rereads is, you know, you have this character Aragorn, right, who mm-hmm. is the once and future king, and he comes back to be king, and his preparation for being king has been to roam the wilderness and slay orcs with his sword. And I just wonder how that's going to play out in a council meeting. Anyway, in Paradox, so I had some things that I was thinking about. In Paradox, we have, you know, my character, main character, Jax. He's a prince. He loses everything. He gets taken away from the life that he knows. He loses everything, including his sense of self, ultimately. And he has to figure out how to come back to that. You know, and coming back from that, you know, just lopping off people's heads with your sword isn't really conducive to coming back from that. Anyway, so in Paradox, that's his journey. You know, he loses everything. He has to figure out how to survive that, both physically and emotionally, find that resilience. In Prophecy, the next book in the trilogy, which is also now available, continue.
Where is it available?
It is available at Dolly's Bookstore. It is available at Atticus, and it is available online.
And we're going to come back. I know you're going to do a book signing. I want to come back to that at the end of the interview, but go ahead. What's happening in the second book?
So in Prophecy, we continue Jax's journey. You know, he kind of comes back to, I don't want to ruin the whole story. But anyway, you know, now he's in sort of a different situation, and he has to solve political issues. He, of course, is... he has some baggage from his journey from book number one, and he has to sort of put all these things back together and again, trying to move forward. So I created these books because I wanted to read something a little bit different than what I was finding out there. And so, again, you know, in many fantasy trilogies or situations, it ends with the, you know, the battle of five armies, where, again, we're lopping off heads with swords. And... I just thought, well, what if we, you know, I don't think war is a great solution to things. So what if we didn't have a battle? But then that, you know, from a writer perspective, that meant that I had to come up with a different plot device. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage people to read it.
There's a surprise.
My readers, yeah. Well, you know, I've been really gratified by a lot of people telling me how much they've enjoyed it. I appreciate it when people didn't enjoy it, they don't tell me. But I've been also kind of surprised by who has really loved it. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know Charlie Sturgis in town, right? The renowned Charlie. He loves it. He couldn't wait for the second one, and now he's also already pestering me for the galley proofs of the third one. So, I mean, I think there's just a variety of people who have really enjoyed it. You know, college kids, obviously adults. So, you know, if people are done skiing early, maybe this season, grabbing Paradox and Prophecy and sitting by the fire is maybe an alternative adventure.
And Cheryl, without sort of undermining the suspense of the plots of the second book, can you give us a sense of where you're going in the third book, or is that impossible to do given what happened?
You know, I've been writing these books for a long time, and I sort of also, you know, I taught skiing for a long time, and skiing is really a lot about balance. And so I thought, you know, the way I sort of conceived of it is Paradox, book number one, is about balance with one person. Prophecy is about balance with two. And the next book, which is called Praxis, is about balance with your community.
Okay. So you mentioned that you've always been attracted to the world of fantasy. Talk to us a little bit about who the authors in fantasy that you've been most enthusiastic about and probably have influenced your writing.
Most recently, I would say Lois McMaster Bujold, who writes, that's called the Vorkosian series. There are many, many. And her characters are really interesting. A very thoughtful fantasy. She's also got one, I think it's called The Sharing Knife. I went to historical fiction for a long time just because, again, it's trying to look at something different. And there's a writer called Dorothy Dunnett who is absolutely amazing. There are Facebook, you know, communities online to discuss her books because they are so rich, so involved. And so she's another one of my big influences.
And how long have you actually been writing? I mean, I know Paradox came out, what, two years ago?
Last year.
So, and how long have you been writing? Are these your first full-length novels?
I've been writing them for 30 years.
Okay.
You know, I got distracted. Taught skiing.
Life gets in the way.
I got this other job, kids. You know, I've been really kind of glad, actually, that I had the time to rework them. I have a terrific writing group in Park City that has helped me kind of make the books better. But as I said, you know, these are always the books that I wanted to read. So the book I wanted to read when I was 25 is not the same book that I want to read when I am my current age, which mm-hmm. is more than 25. So I think they're more thoughtful and, but still, I mean, you know, I wanted them to be fun. I want you to get to the end of the chapter and stay up all night because you can't, yeah, put it down.
Speaking of staying up all night, you do have a day job.
I do.
How do you find the time and the energy to do this writing? When do you write? How do you write?
Well, I learned in about 2011. So I've always been a writer. You know, I was in a second grade class and the teacher put a picture on the wall and said, make up a story. And but I'm also a reader. So that is kind of, those things go together for me really well. And, you know, in the teens and I, you know, my kids were little and our kids were little and, you know, the day job at the Summit Land Conservancy was getting more and more intense and I was finding it really hard to be happy. And I came home one day and my wonderful husband says to me, you're just not happy. And I said, I am, darn it. So I went to therapy and the therapist said, what makes you happy? And I said, writing. She says, why don't you write? I said, well, because then I will only write. Nobody will eat. We won't, you know, nothing else. Land won't get saved, whatever. And she said to me, keeping that door, that creative door shut, takes more energy than opening it. And, you know, people may have heard of Brené Brown. She's quite renowned. And her line, which is on my desk, says, unused creativity is not benign. So a person who is inherently creative must create. It is not a choice. You must, because if you do not, well, there's madness anyway. And so what I did is I started, I call them my writing Mondays, so Monday mornings, I write. And I try not to take appointments or other meetings. The house would be empty, kids would go to school, husband went to work, and I would write. So I'd been working on these books for a long time, you know, I'd had them in different forms. And I wasn't really sure where the you know, one book ended and the next book started. I kind of knew the whole story. So starting in about 2011, I sat down and wrote the whole thing all the way through. And now here we are. So the books are all, it's done. It's just a matter of getting them produced.
And speaking of production, are these self-published? Do you have a publisher? How's it working?
My publisher is Surrogate Press. Mm-hmm. And then there's a local artist named Michelle Rayner who's done my covers for me. And yeah, so they're out there on all the normal places.
All the major mm-hmm. platforms.
Yeah.
And okay, what is the time frame for the next book?
So again, I need the house to be empty, which it will be over the weekend because everybody else who lives in my house right now teaches skiing still. So I hope to get it to the publisher early in 2025. And yeah, by this time next year, all three will be available.
We'll be back here next year to do
I
this
hope
again.
So. Yeah.
Cheryl, before we go, I know we have a book signing tomorrow. Can you tell our listeners
right.
about it and once again where they can find the book?
That's right. So I'll be signing books at Dolly's tomorrow evening on the winter solstice, which seems appropriate for these books, from 5 to 7 p.m. again at Dolly's Bookstore. They're also available at Atticus and on Amazon.com. If you go to Amazon, you have to put in C.A. Fox Books and then Paradox or Prophecy and you will find it.
Okay. Cheryl, thanks for spending time with us this morning and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
We'll be right back after this. I'm joined in the studio now by Mayor Nan Worrell, who is not the only person in the studio wearing bright red glasses. Good morning, Mayor. Thanks for spending time with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So the Park City Council held a regular meeting last night, and here with a debrief and maybe a brief look at overall developments of last year as the mayor. Let's start with the Main Street Area Plan. I know there was a presentation on that, although I think that was very near the end of a very long meeting.
Well, actually, that item took 2.5 hours. We started it at 7:30, and we adjourned a little bit after 10. So it was a long night for the council. It was about over a seven-hour meeting.
And let's talk a little bit about it. I know there was a lot of public input.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably a good thing.
We love it, yeah.
Okay. What were some of the things you heard last night?
You know, there was, obviously, as always, there was a real diversity of opinion. There was significant concern about losing our historic character, maintaining, you know, what makes Park City so unique and not trying to, you know, emulate somebody else, but rather let's really enhance what we already have. And we're proud of our historic designation. We want to keep that. And so people were concerned about that. They were concerned. The rendering of the hotel got a lot of attention. People were like, we don't want a 6-foot building or whatever. And so there was some opposition to having a hotel. The gondola had quite a few comments about it, the proposed gondola, I should say.
Yeah, remind people, where would that go? Let's do both of those.
Sure.
Let's do the hotel first. Where would the hotel go if it were to happen?
It would be down towards the flagpole lot.
Okay.
And then on the other end of Sweet Alley at the Brewpub lot, it's proposed that perhaps a gondola would be there to connect up to Deer Valley. And there was some people really in support of that. There mm-hmm. were some people very opposed to that. You know, it's one of those things that, like all other aspects of this plan, have to be vetted. You know, it may not be feasible to fly a gondola out of there.
And for our listeners who don't follow this, you know, really, really closely, this was a, can you sort of explain what the plan was in terms of, this isn't a blueprint for what's going to be done. This is more of a big picture conceptual concept. Can you sort of explain what you're trying to accomplish at this point?
Absolutely. So the city's been asked for several years by Main Street merchants and the HPCA and some of the Old Town residents to come up with some sort of a plan to revitalize Main Street, to make it a little more updated so it remains competitive in spite of all of the things that we have going on around us and all the developments that's coming in around us. And so this was in response to that. We put together a committee of Main Street merchants as well as some Old Town residents. The chamber was involved in that. And wow, that committee got to work and worked fast. And they had several four-hour meetings to come up with what should Park City, Main Street look like in the future, And how could we pay for that without leaning on the taxpayers to fund all of that? And so, you know, they brought a few consultants in to work alongside of that committee. The process was driven by staff as well as by this committee, and they came up with these recommendations, and not all of them were unanimous. For example, the traffic flow on Main Street. People don't, for the most part, disagree that our sidewalks are crowded, and many people end up walking in the street because it's difficult to, on crowded days, to get around folks. And so there's interest in widening the sidewalks. But if you widen the sidewalks and still have two rows of parking, one on each side, and then you have two lanes of traffic, there's just not space. So they recommended a one-way downhill traffic with parking on the street, and then they would have some electric shuttles, if you will, running up and down, mm-hmm. so that people are able to get easily from one end of the street down to the other.
Okay, so some of these things, it seems to me, are almost inevitable, like the idea of doing something with the sidewalks and the pedestrian access. Some of these are more dicey.
Sure.
Where are we now in the process? I mean, you had this meeting last night. What do you want staff to do before the next meeting?
The council stopped short of approving the plan. You know, and I think plan probably isn't the right title for it, as you mentioned.
Concept.
They're concepts, and they're mm-hmm. a vision that has to be vetted, and it hasn't been yet because that wasn't the charge of the committee. They were to come up with these ideas. They come up with some really bold ideas. And many times the community says, hey, we want some really bold change. And then when you get up to it, they're like, no, don't do that. So, you know, it was a great conversation, interesting conversation. The council's interesting in focusing on pedestrian improvements right now, as well as making sure that we have a traffic circulation plan that is going to work. Because if we don't have the traffic circulation, we're dead in the water.
And you mentioned something else that I think is obviously very important, and that is money. Where does the money, if this is not going to hit the taxpayer, what are the concepts that would allow for the funding of this that you're thinking about?
You know, it was proposed the hotel, and there's a hotel proposed on the flagpole lot, as well as one up at this end of the street in the China Bridge area. More of a business hotel. So there would be two mm-hmm. on the street. And the development dollars that come from that would provide the income to be able to do our infrastructure.
Okay. So obviously that's yet another. So in a sense, you got almost, it's hard to do one without the other. Financially,
sure.
Right? You can't do the pedestrian thing unless you have some additional funding source. You know, this all, you talked about the importance of this. Main Street, a lot of people view Main Street as sort of the vibrant center of town. Mm-hmm. How big a threat do people see from the new developments over at East Deer Valley in terms of the economic robustness of this area?
You know, I think that there's definite concern about that. People think that Main Street is our largest source of tax revenue, sales tax revenue, and that's simply not the case right now. Surprisingly, at least it was to me, 27% of our sales tax revenue comes from online sales. And I had just learned that statistic, and then I was standing on Main Street on Halloween looking up and down thinking, well, how many of these costumes came from online that I'm looking here? But 27%. And then another 25% of our sales tax revenue comes from Deer Valley. And a distant 16% of our sales tax revenue comes from Main Street.
And for those of us who are slow on the uptake, how do we get tax revenue from an online sale? Are those local businesses that are selling online?
No. When you order from Amazon or one of the big retailers, you have to pay sales tax now, and then that comes back to the city.
Okay. What's next on the agenda with respect to Main Street? What happens next?
Staff is going to come back with sort of a timeline and maybe how we can phase things in and certainly start to work on, you know, some pedestrian. What would that look like? How would we do feasibility? You know, the next step really is feasibility.
Yeah.
For any of the suggested parts of the plan.
And I guess that's where the rubber meets the road. You start with big concepts, then you got to try to figure out whether these wonderfully interesting things could really be done.
Do they work?
And do the numbers pencil out would you need both hotels? Would you need, you know, all this stuff to make
exactly.
it work?
Exactly. You know, and I have a concern because we've had China Bridge evaluated, and China Bridge was built in two parts, and the oldest part is having some aging
structural issues.
Yep. And so it's got about a 5-year life, and we need to start thinking about that. We need to start planning for that, because we can't wait for 4 years and then say, oops, we got to fix China Bridge.
Is the notion of moving MARSAC on the table, was that discussed last night?
No, we really separated that away from the Main Street area plan, because that building's staying there.
Yes.
It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on Main Street, or can we turn to the senior center?
Oh, we can turn to seniors.
Okay. Talk to us about that. I know there is, where do things stand on the proposed redevelopment of the senior center? What did you hear last night?
Oh, gosh. You know.
That wasn't supposed to be a hard question.
Well, yeah, it is. The senior center is a project that's near and dear to my heart. And as I said in the meeting last night, I'm extremely frustrated that we don't have a shovel in the ground by now. The developers have done a site plan. It's a really tight site. It's a difficult site because it's got buildings all
stuck
around
on all
it.
Sides, yeah,
and it's got some slope issues and all of that. So to put a 10,000 square foot senior center there and 44 affordable units on that same parcel is like fitting sardines into a sardine can. It's doable.
Mm-hmm.
It's doable. It's just a matter of cost, like most things. And, you know, are we going to be able to do it without undergrounding all of the parking? How much parking can we reduce for it? So those were the kind of things. And unfortunately, we ran out of time for that. It was a work session item, and the conservation easement took longer than we anticipated. And so the senior center got, you know, maybe a quarter way through the discussion, and then we're continuing it to January 9th.
And we're looking at something like a $20 million price tag for that project. Is that $20 million from the city?
Yes, that's okay. The city's contribution. There's no other dollars for the senior center other than city dollars. And so the affordable housing, the developer is confident that we could get a 4% LIHTC to help with the project. But it's going to be significant. You know, right now it's anticipated $240,000 per unit for the affordable.
And you mentioned that you're frustrated there's no shovel in the ground. We're not going to be sitting here next year having the same conversation, are we?
No, not if I can help it. I tell you what, we need to move forward, and there's will on the council to move it forward. There's unanimous support among the council members to build a senior center. It's just a matter of, do we build the senior center first and then add the housing at another time, or do we bite the bullet and do it all at one time?
And what's your timeline for getting those decisions made?
I'm going to push January 6th.
Okay. We'll be back in a month or so and just see whether we got there.
There we go.
All right. Easement. Explain what the Treasure Hill Conservation Easement is before we go into what happened.
Yeah, the conservation easement is a binding document that protects the land and makes sure that it's doing, hello.
we have a guest dog in the studio who's being very friendly, but very friendly. That's part of life here at KPCW. Anyway, this was part of the Treasure, is this sort of a child of the Treasure Hill acquisition?
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
It was when that parcel was acquired as open space, mm-hmm. then it was anticipated at that time that a conservation easement would go on it, just like Bonanza Flat has a conservation easement to make sure that the land stays protected and you know, is used for the intention of the bond.
So the discussion last night was, are there tweaks that have to be made to start getting that conservation in a form satisfactory to the council? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, so the bulk of it is done. Staff came to council last night for some direction on certain items within the conservation easement. One of them was there's some homeowners that have encroached onto the city property with either patios or stairs or some landscaping or whatever. And so as the there has to be a baseline for the conservation easement. And so the question to the council was, you know, do you want to leave those there or do you want to have them removed? And the council chose to have them removed.
Okay. And then are Park City Mountain operations an issue? Do they touch on this area that's going to be subject to the easement?
Through a lift.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that an issue that's got to be resolved?
Not an issue that has to be resolved. You know, it was the question came to the council if, you know, somebody wanted to realign a lift or do something like that, who had the ultimate authority? Should it be Summit Land Conservancy, who is a fabulous partner of the city and, yeah, we have so much respect for? Or, you know, does the council want to retain that authority? And the council chose to retain that authority.
Okay. Shovels on the ground. You mentioned, I want to hear about where the Bonanza RFP process is, because those shovels still aren't in the ground.
No, they're not, but they're going to be.
Okay. When?
I'm really excited because, as you know, we put out an RFP. That period closed. We got several submissions. We had a really qualified, diverse selection committee of experts that went over each application with a fine-toothed comb to see how close it came to the RFP, you know, how some of them were very creative, what could be done with the land. So right after the first of the year, we're going to get a recommendation, and the council will be asked to select the developer.
I believe I understand that the process is fairly segregated and that the information that the committee that's reviewing the proposals is not being shared with almost anyone. Do you at least have a sense that they got enough robust proposals to be happy?
That's what I've been told.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And you're right, there is that separation because the council doesn't want to be the one to write the RFP and make the selection and then make the approval body for that. Because if my Uncle Vinny wanted to apply and I wanted to appoint him, I don't want to be part of that selection process.
As an old government contracts and procurement lawyer, I believe that's a wise choice.
Thank you.
Okay. Before we go, I can't resist asking you about what do you think the three biggest developments of the year for the city were?
Oof. Top of mind is the Olympics. What an amazing thing, an exciting thing that happened for us last July when the 2034 Olympic Games, Winter Olympics, were awarded to Utah, and certainly Park City is going to have a big role in that. So the Olympics is something we're looking forward to. And our child care scholarship program that we kicked off really early this year, and we have 100 families receiving scholarships now, both from locals as well as from our workforce, and it went national. We were recognized by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and Michelle Downard, who's kind of on our staff, who's been organizing and running that program, spoke at the National Child Care Innovation Summit in Washington, D.C., and then after that, the U.S. Conference of Mayors reached out to us for more information on the program, so it's getting some attention.
And you have a third?
The third would be, it just came across my desk this week, the Silver King Mine Coalition Historic District has been added to the National Register of Historic Places, which is a huge honor and accomplishment, and we've got to give that credit to the Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History for their advocacy and their work.
All right, before we go, Mayor, three big challenges. What are the three big challenges you're looking at for next year?
The big challenges are to keep the momentum that we have. You know, we had some key staff turnover this year, and people, went on to other careers and other career goals and the private sector where it was more financially lucrative for them. So maintaining that staff, we have our city manager's done an excellent job of keeping the boat afloat during that turnover. And so we have great new staff in place that have come in and haven't missed a beat. Our three main projects, the Main Street Area Plan, Bonanza Park, and the Senior Center all lost their project managers. And yet, we have new project managers in those. So, the council liaisons really stepped up to the plate and kind of kept the ball moving until we were able to get those staff in place. But they all have really great leadership now.
Okay. I think that was two. Do we have a third challenge?
Yeah, of course, traffic. Traffic's always a challenge. But I'm encouraged. We've got the BRT on the horizon that's coming in soon. And the
Bus Rapid Transit Line.
I'm sorry. Yes. Sorry. And then the reimagined 248 plans to try to, find some other alternatives other than sitting in traffic. And I think that the Richardson Flat success from last year, which we're so proud of, with the ridership that came with the direct buses to the resorts and then to Main Street for events and that type of thing, really was successful in the shoulder running bus lanes.
I suspect those are going to get a lot of use this week.
I hope so.
All right. We've been speaking with Mayor Nan Worrell. Thanks for spending time with us this morning. Best wishes for happy holidays and congratulations on a good year.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this. The Park City Ski Patrol Union and Vail Resorts met for negotiation Wednesday night. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the union has now filed unfair labor practice charges.
The Park City Professional Ski Patrol Association and Vail have been negotiating since the last contract expired in April. Both parties are following their previous agreement until a new one is reached. On Monday, President of Vail Resorts Mountain Division Bill Rock told KPCW the union agreed to its proposal to engage a mediator during negotiations. He said it was, quote, some of the most promising news so far. Mediation comes on the heels of the union filing multiple unfair labor practice complaints against Vail with the National Labor Relations Board. Union spokesperson Quinn Graves said these complaints include delaying negotiations and failing to meet at reasonable intervals.
Another one is the company started making some phone calls earlier this week asking internally of employees if we were to go on strike, if they would cross the picket line and come to work.
Graves also pointed out their negotiators requested mediation in mid-November. The union proposed its initial economic package proposal on September 20th, and Graves said Vail didn't respond until 55 days later in November. That's when union leaders asked to involve a mediator.
They didn't say anything until a couple weeks ago, and then they were like, yeah, we could be open to a mediator. And then when all parties agreed to mediation on Monday, they have kind of spun it to the media to say that it was their idea and that the union has accepted mediation.
Park City Mountain Vice President and Chief Operating Officer Deidre Walsh confirmed Thursday that the union proposed mediation early on.
And I'm really pleased that we all agreed on Monday night that this is the reasonable next step to reach a resolution. And I think the really valuable thing about mediators is that they can really support moving complex items along efficiently.
The two parties came to a tentative agreement on an education and training package Wednesday. However, Graves said Vail did not come prepared with counteroffers on wages or benefits. She said the company also did not address the union's request to adjust wages for inflation annually, so the contract doesn't need to be renegotiated every couple of years. The local patrol union wants Vail to raise the patroller's base wage from $21 to $23 per hour across all resorts to adjust for nationwide inflation. The group also wants Vail to increase compensation for more experienced patrollers. Vail Resort's counteroffer includes less than a 0.5% wage increase to entry-level patrollers and no increases to benefits. While Vail said it has included other improvements in its offer, including a 4% wage increase for returning patrollers, Graves said this isn't new. The 4% wage increase includes merit increases earned last season under the expired contract.
3.5% of their 4% metric is actually our annual merit increase that is given to all Vail employees. And so this is based on how well you perform during the season. So they are choosing to withhold our merit-based increases right now. And that is not something that is agreed to in the contract. It's a company merit-based increase that they give every year.
Walsh said the 4% increase is still part of the contract and up for negotiation.
The union's wages are set in their contract, including any annual increases for returning patrollers. Since we're currently negotiating their contract, our last wage offer includes an average of a 4% increase for returning patrollers this year.
Graves also said the local union's struggles are not unique. Other unions representing Vail employees, including Keystone Ski Patrol and Crested Butte Lift Maintenance, reported experiencing similar tactics. Vail also has open unfair labor practice complaints from Crested Butte and Keystone. While ski patrollers and mountain safety staff don't want to strike, Graves said they are prepared to if necessary. While no date has been set, union members unanimously authorized a strike last week. The union is holding a fundraiser at Oshuck's White House Sunday to raise money in case of a strike. The organization has raised over $18,000 of its $50,000 goal as of Thursday. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And with us on the phone on what I expect is a rather busy day is Salt Lake City International Airport Marketing Communications Director Nancy Vollmer. Nancy, thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Good morning, everyone.
Nancy, how are things looking so far this morning with the holiday rush?
Well, it's really interesting because when you look at the Thanksgiving holiday, that is on a Thursday, and so we saw a couple of really busy days leading up to the holiday. Whereas now with the Christmas holiday on a Wednesday, we're just seeing a gradual increase in the passengers. So there definitely are more passengers coming through the airport, but we're just not seeing those big days like we did around Thanksgiving. Now that will change when people are arriving home. For example, the weekends after both Christmas and New Year's are expected to be very busy at the airport.
And so coming up, which days do you expect to be busiest over the next week?
Yeah, I would say that we're starting to see an increase in passengers starting today, and then it will just gradually increase. And then usually the Christmas Eve is a little bit lighter, and of course Christmas Day is lighter as well. But just to give you an idea of the numbers of passengers that we consider, you know, a busy day at the airport, we track that through the number of passengers that are coming through the front door. So those passengers who are leaving Salt Lake City, not those who are arriving here. So if an average day would be about 26,000 passengers coming through the front door, we see just as many arriving. So if it's an extra busy time around the holidays, we're going to see somewhere up to 30,000 per day and even up to 33,000 per day. But we are expecting these busy days, and so we work with all of our tenants, with the TSA, with our concessions, to make sure we're staffed up so we can handle the increase in passengers.
And let's talk about, you mentioned Thanksgiving, and let's talk a little bit about the Thanksgiving rush. I know that I personally went through the airport in the middle of the day on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and it was incredibly smooth. Were you generally happy with the way things went over that last holiday?
We absolutely were. In fact, we heard that same sentiment from a number of our passengers. And I think it's because we were prepared and we had the staff, especially with the TSA security checkpoint. They had all of those stations staffed, which really makes a difference in getting people through smoothly. And again, once people get through, all of our concessions are aware that we have increased traffic, so they make sure that they have the staffing necessary to accommodate those busier times.
Now, early on after the airport opened, I know we spoke about this a couple of years ago, there were a lot of concerns expressed about the long walks, particularly to the B gates. How has the new tunnel impacted that?
Oh, you know what? It's made a huge difference. And the reason that we were not able to open up this new tunnel prior to this last October is because we had to build it. A lot of people have asked that, and we could not build it until we tore down the old airport. And so we did have the mid-concourse tunnel, which was being used previous to this, and it's still in use, too. And believe it or not, that tunnel was built in 2004 in preparation for this project. So that tunnel served us well. But now when people are exiting the security checkpoint, they turn right. Before, they would typically turn left just to get to the A or the B concourses. Now they can turn right to access more gates on Concourse A East. And then they can go straight through the River Tunnel and into Concourse B Plaza. And I have to tell you, the River Tunnel is beautiful.
It's pretty cool.
It has, yeah, it really is. And we have some wonderful music in three different sections. And people can actually download the playlist on Spotify or YouTube. And then once they exit the escalators or the elevator, they're into this beautiful plaza area that has the Canyon 2.0 art continued. Plus, we have the Northern Light, and we have Alley the Allosaurus. So it's a really fun area to be in.
Now, we talked about the new tunnel, obviously, is a big deal in terms of a significant improvement at the airport. What projects are left that are currently sort of expected for the construction of the airport?
Right, yeah, so this is a phased program, and in 2020, we opened up phase one, which included the parking garage, the terminal, and then the west end of concourses A and B. Phase two was the opening of the east end of Concourse A, and the Concourse A, of course, is all Delta gates. And then phase three included the River Tunnel and then some of the gates on Concourse B East. We have about five gates that opened, along with the plaza area and 12 concessions. So right now we're constructing phase four, and that will be opening up between the next couple of years. So it'll be finally completed in 2026. And that includes 16 more gates, as well as 12 concessions. And, of course, we also will be having a couple of new lounges. Delta is opening up a lounge on Concourse B, right by that plaza area. And then we also have a Centurion Lounge that will be opening up. So I think it's going to be a really nice space.
Nancy, before we go, I think people are interested in new international routes. Are we looking at any new international routes out of Salt Lake over the next couple of years?
Oh, yeah, we're very excited to work with Delta on a new nonstop route to Incheon, South Korea. So that's coming in mid-June, and that's something that we've all been waiting for a very long time. That new route, we've expected to have some other new routes coming, too, because we have this larger airport. We have more capacity, so we can recruit new airlines and more air service. So I think that's really going to be something the locals will appreciate.
Okay. Anything else you want to add before we go, particularly any suggestions for our travelers this busy season?
Yeah, we just always ask people to allow plenty of time coming to the airport, you know, 2 hours if you're flying domestically, 3 hours if you're flying internationally, and also make sure that you know what you can pack on your carry-on so that doesn't delay people who are going through the security screening lane and those behind you. So, you know, just be prepared, and we also have some performers that we have scheduled at the airport beginning tomorrow through Christmas Eve. So just enjoy it, allow some extra time, do a little shopping, maybe some dining, and then head to your gate.
Okay. When speaking with Nancy Vollmer of the Salt Lake City Airport, thanks for spending time with us and happy holidays.
Oh, happy holidays to you too. Thank you.
Just in time for the holidays, the KPCW team has been sprucing up the KPCW app. They've redesigned it with new features, a fresh look, and a streamlined design. Joining me in the studio this morning, we have KPCW's Digital Media Director, Matt Sampson, and KPCW's Development Director, Sarah Irvin, to talk about the new app, the new features that support community engagement. Good morning, Matt. Let's start with you. Let's talk about the new look, and why did you want to redesign the app anyway?
Well, good morning, Roger. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. Happy Friday to everybody. And the app redesign has been on our mind for quite some time now. And one of the initial challenges of the design is we wanted to just make it more intuitive, easier to use, and we wanted it to look better than the previous app. And some of the challenges when you start going through these changes and these redesigns is there is just kind of a plethora of information.
Layer after layer.
Yeah, we really do provide so much information and so many community resources with everything that we do here at KPCW that it was a challenge to try and find a way to include as much of that information within the app that we could, but also make it visually appealing and something that is easily to navigate and get through. And I think we accomplished that. It looks good. We kind of have four main sections of the app if people are taking a look at it or updating the app for the first time. There's these four tabs at the top of the app, which are essentially channels. So we have our homepage. I'll get into that a little bit more. We have a news section, a podcast section, and then our new En Español section for our Spanish-speaking community. And so it was just a great way to try and include as much information we could on that homepage. There's some tabs up the top where you can connect with us on social media. You can get into some of our programs and things that we offer for the community, like our Lost and Found or community calendar. You can sign up for the local. And you can also go to the news page. You get all the recent Wasatchback news, but you also have that top NPR stories that's contained within there, too, because we know that we have a pretty savvy audience and they like to stay informed. So those are some of the things that we offer. And then you can also go to the podcast page, which has a new, nice layout of all of our public affairs programs. So if you're interested on what Roger said on Mountain Money on Monday, you can easily click on that Mountain Money podcast page, and it'll take you to all the latest segments. And we have everything else there from Cool Science Radio, Fresh Tracks Friday, and all the fun stuff that we like. And I think one of the other things that is really important is just having that community engagement and those community sections available on the homepage. And I think Sarah could probably speak more to why that's important.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I mean, obviously, we're so proud of this app redesign, and we hope everyone out there who's listening is getting ready to download it right away. But one of the key pillars of KPCW's mission is to support our local nonprofit community. We do that through a variety of ways, of course, on local news hour, interviews, news stories, interviews on our public affairs shows, and through our community calendar. And we really want folks to understand that when they come to KPCW's new app, they can click on that community calendar very easily at the top there, as Matt said, under the homepage. It's in our Stay Connected link, and you can see all the different events that are taking place across our nonprofit community in Summit and Wasatch counties on that community calendar. We also have a Let's Connect button where we want to hear from our community members themselves, our listeners, our donors. You can tell us your favorite KPCW story. You can provide a news tip. We'd love to have testimonials about, you know, your favorite KPCW memories or why you listen. So it's really a way for us to engage further and further with the community with this new app.
Matt, before we go on, let's do some mechanics. If I have the old app, I've been using it, what should I do in order to smoothly migrate to the new app?
Yeah, it's a very good question. The good news is, depending on the settings on your phone, you might not have to do anything at all.
That never works for me, but go ahead.
Well, and there are some kinks, as there are with any type of update. So if you have automatic updates set on your phone, it'll just automatically update the app if you already have the old KPCW app installed on your phone. If not, the next time you open the KPCW app, it it will prompt you to update. Now, we did discover that with iOS users, iPhone users, that sometimes it didn't quite fully load the redesign of the app. And in those cases, we suggest that you delete the old KPCW app and then re-download and reinstall the latest version of KPCW app. It's free. You can find it at the App Store or on Google Play, and that'll solve any issues you might have.
And I'm just going to tag team on what Matt just said there. It's free, but this redesign is not free to KPCW. And, you know, we're so proud of the services that we provide this community. And the only reason that we can do it is because of listener support. So I'm going to make a quick year-end plug. As people are, you know, planning their charitable giving before December 31st, we do hope you'll keep KPCW in mind. There's a really handy red donate button there at the top of the app. If you download the new version, you can make a quick donation there. You can also always hop on kpcw.org and make a year-end donation to the station. And we're so grateful for that support. And that support enables us to continue to evolve and roll out new services like this new mobile app. And we're so excited about additional new programs and services that we're working on for 2025.
Matt, 20 seconds. What's your favorite new feature with the app redesign?
I like that you have the power of KPCW in the palm of your hand anywhere you are. So when I'm driving up and down the canyon every day, I can stay connected, never drop a signal, never lose a second of listening to KPCW.
Okay. Anything else you want to touch on before we go?
No. Okay. Just download the app.
Download it and let us know what you think. Let's connect.
And if you have problems, you can call us here at the station and we will help be your technical support if you need it.
That's great.
Okay. Thanks for spending time with us. Okay, you've been listening to the Local News Hour. If you have suggestions for news that you'd like to see us cover, shoot us an email, news@kpcw.org. And if you see something on the road, give us a call at the text the DJ line, 435-655-8255.